Support for Radio Boston comes from Hadestown at the Box Center Wang Theater, Broadway's Tony and Grammy-winning Best Musical, an epic celebration of music, togetherness, and hope, raves Forbes. Playing April 23rd through April 28th. Buy your tickets today at boxcenter.org.
This is Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. Anthony Brooks is off today. In just about an hour, what once seemed so improbable is expected to become a certainty. Tom Menino, Boston's longest-serving mayor, will announce that he will not seek re-election to lead the city he so loves. Here he is, speaking with reporters this morning outside of his home in Hyde Park.
It's a sad day, but it's a day that always will come in your career.
It must be such a hard decision now.
Oh, it's a very difficult decision, you know. when you have something you really love, you lived 24/7 for the last 20 years. It's tough to say no, but the time and place for everything.
Well, Menino is expected to speak to the city at 4 o'clock today from Faneuil Hall. And that's where we'll begin with WBUR's Dolores Handy, who's there. Hi there, Dolores.
Hi, Meghna. I'm actually not in Faneuil Hall right now. I was earlier for a couple of hours as stagehands and broadcast and other media technicians were wiring the hall for lights and sounds for the activity this evening. But then they did a canine sweep. We all had to leave. They're just now letting people go back in, and folks are slowly filing back inside. It's an interesting mix in terms of the mood of the people. This is big, big news. It means a big shift in the politics of the city, and a lot of people are just apprehensive about what it means for the city.
So what have they been saying in particular as you've spoken to Bostonians throughout the day?
Bostonians are saying if it's for his health, it's good, but he's been good for the city. They hate to see him go, but maybe it was time for him to go. Some say maybe it's time for new blood, but they all have been concerned about the health problems he's been plagued with since that vacation in Italy that he had to cut short back in October, which kept him hospitalized for 8 weeks. And remember, he just moved back into his own home this past Saturday night, sleeping in his own bed for the first time since October. So there's a little joy in his voice when he talked about that, and I think people picked up on that, and they're happy for him. They're grateful for what he's done for the city. Most say he has left the city in a far better shape than it was when he took over, and that was his one pledge some 20 years ago. I hope that when I leave, the city's in better shape than it was when I came in.
WBUR's Dolores Handy speaking to us from outside Faneuil Hall. We'll check in with Dolores a little later this hour as well. Thanks so much, Dolores.
Thank you, Meghna.
Now, Menino has been Boston's mayor for 20 years, a record 5 terms in office, but he's been on the city's political scene for even longer. In 1984, he began a 9-year stint representing District 5 on the Boston City Council. Ray Flynn was mayor at the time, and early in his tenure, Flynn proposed increasing the number of Boston jobs for Boston residents. That rule raised the hackles of many construction workers' unions whose members lived outside the city. But in 1986, then-city councilor Menino, ever the politically savvy Boston booster, told WGBH that Flynn's ordinance is working for everybody.
I think some of those trades are up to 24%, some up to 20%. But they are making progress. They are working with it. In the 2.5 years that the ordinance has been in effect, we haven't waged one sanction against a construction trade yet.
WBUR reporter Bruce Gellerman is here, and he joins us with more on Menino's political career. Hi there, Bruce.
Hi there, Meghna.
So early on, Menino was referred to when he first assumed the mayor's office as the accidental mayor. Remind us why that is.
Well, I'm not sure it was an accurate depiction, because he rose to power when Ray Flynn, who had been Boston's mayor, was appointed to the ambassadorship of the Vatican. And everyone thought that Menino was kind of a caretaker, not savvy enough, not articulate enough to win an election on his own, but he surprised everyone. He was a protege of Joe Tumulty. He was a longtime politician. He had been a state senator, had worked in the state senator's office, and he was groomed all these many years. He did everything from put campaign posters in the ground to organizing fundraisers. But when Flynn left, that's when Menino inherited basically Flynn's friends.
His relation. Was a strong relationship. And when Ray Flynn left that office, he left Tommy as the acting mayor. And there was a built-in organization of Ray Flynn people who stayed with him in that fight. And that put him over the top.
Boy, did it ever make me. He crushed his opponent that year.
Wow. Yeah, so accidental was definitely not the right name
right,
for him.
Right, right. No, he had learned his lessons.
And that was Joe Timmelty that we just heard from as well. Well, let's talk about, for a moment, the mayor's famous, let's put it that way, elocution, because he has sometimes been very unkindly referred to as Mumbles Menino.
Yeah, he wasn't the most articulate of all politicians, but he knew how to wield power. And for him, all power was personal. This guy really knew how to play people. He had been everywhere. He worked 18 hours a day. He was all over the city. He was at every neighborhood. I spoke to Mike Barnicle, who was a longtime columnist for the Boston Globe. He had first given him a nickname. He called him the Urban Mechanic. And I asked Barnicle about where he got that name.
I actually was with him one day, I believe it was in Roslindale, stopped the car, get out of the car, look at a little league field where the grass had overgrown nearly the infield, go to a payphone. There were no cell phones then. That's how long he's been mayor. Called the Parks Department, and got that field mowed. That's who he is. He was interested in stop signs and hydrants that worked and painted crosswalks. And his interest was making the city that he has lived in all of his life as open and as livable and as safe and as comfortable and as clean for everyone. That's why he's a success.
That tape there from Mike Barnicle. But Bruce, Mayor Menino commanded intense loyalty from his staff.
Absolutely.
And people who may have irritated him sometimes found him a little thin-skinned. But his loyalty in terms of the political class around Boston is still very high, isn't it?
Oh, sure. His endorsement is very valuable to this day. He was a very savvy politically, and he really could get out the vote. His, his vote machine was unmatched, and he genuinely, as you hear Barnicle say, he genuinely cares about Boston. He considers it a series of neighborhoods. And, those around him bought into his vision of the city.
And it's a vision that he reminded us this morning that he still has 9 months more.
That's right. He's not letting go till then.
WBR's Bruce Gellerman. Thanks so much, Bruce.
You bet.
Now on to the question of legacy. After Mayor Menino does indeed vacate the mayor's office, he's had a 20-year mayoral career, so there is certainly much to choose from. But here's how Menino himself answered the question about his legacy this morning outside a very noisy city hall.
What about buildings, about people, how you left people, and how you made the city work for us? Because some of those people out there who I see every day, and it's those kids in schools that we give opportunities for good education, that's what legacy is all about. It's not buildings, it's not roadways, it's none of those monuments.
So Mayor Menino says it's not about buildings, it's about the people that he hopes he has helped. Well, that thing about the buildings, Bostonians themselves may beg to differ, because the mayor's most dramatic legacy may be the city's skyline itself. WBUR's Kurt Nickus joins us now from the South Boston waterfront with more on the city that Tom Menino built. Hi there, Kurt.
Hi, Meghna. I'm actually at One Marina Park Drive, and we're up on the 14th floor where you can look out and see the South Boston waterfront. And think about this. Mayor Menino came into office in 1993 when Whitey Bulger was still in Boston, in South Boston. And when Whitey came back after being arrested, he wouldn't have recognized this whole waterfront Seaport District area, because if you look out now, you can see the convention center, you can see where the Big Dig, where the interstate goes underground, and you can just see this ring of hotels and development and everything around there, and all of the restaurants along the water, a place that used to be just a big series of parking lots with tumbleweeds. And I think that's one of the probably most concrete legacies of the mayor, somebody who saw this area as a place that could turn into something and definitely put his hand on making sure it turned into one thing and not another. And right now, 6,000 apartments are going to be coming online soon in this area that he likes to call the Innovation District. It's very much an exciting, in-demand area and certainly one of the most concrete examples of how he has changed the city's cityscape.
In fact, weekend by weekend, every time I go down there, it seems like even more exciting and vibrant than the previous weekend before. I mean, that's just one example, Kurt. I mean, I know you've done reporting and visited other places like the Washington Street Corridor, Boylston Street in Fenway, and, of course, Dudley Square now, and hopefully soon Downtown Crossing as well.
Yeah, I mean, he talked about as people being his driving force. I think a lot of the developers I've spoke to today say that is absolutely the case, that he was thinking about who is using the city, who wants to use it, and how, and tried to really put his stamp on development to make sure that it turned into that way. And so that's what's kind of interesting. A lot of his critics say he was too controlling, but his supporters say that he was very disciplined about what could come up, because this whole waterfront area, for instance, could have been a more industrial development, and he made sure that it was going to be retail and apartments and there's a biotechnology firm that set up its headquarters here. So it's a very it's a very clear legacy that he's been able to sort of see through, and I think the other thing is he had 20 years to do it, and so it was very consistent, and he was able to sort of be able to see a lot of things through that might not have happened had he given up or had to leave after 4 or 8 or even 12 years.
But on the other hand, Kurt, you mentioned some of the mayor's critics, because, you know, it's not an unfamiliar criticism that, for example, you know, in construction along the Rose Kennedy Greenway and other places, that people have said that Menino's relationship with developers and with the Boston Redevelopment Authority maybe left something to be desired for folks who had an even more ambitious vision for what they wanted to build.
Yeah, absolutely, and I think he'll be graded on what actually happened. And so I think that's in the end, I think you can say that, you know, he was the one who decided how it developed. But I think if you talk to a lot of Bostonians, they're kind of happy with the way the city is now compared to 20 years ago. And of course, even just the crime reductions in certain areas makes it so that you do want to move into these places and move along. Menino wasn't necessarily a visionary, but he was very opportunistic to see that cleaning, you know, the harbor and the big dig, things that were happening really before him, he saw those as stepping stones to you know, the next development, and he really saw them through.
WBUR's Kurt Nikisch speaking with us today. Thank you so much, Kurt.
You got it.
Well, a reminder, everyone, Mayor Menino is expected to speak at about 4 o'clock about his decision to not run again for re-election. WBUR will carry that speech live, and we'll talk much more about Menino with longtime Boston political analysts a little later in the show. We'll also take your calls and hear your memories of Tom Menino, Boston's longest-serving mayor. Moving on now to statewide politics. It's been a busy week in the race to fill the U.S. Senate seat vacated by Secretary of State John Kerry. Busy perhaps for the candidates, but not so much for many Massachusetts voters, 41% of whom, according to this week's WBUR poll, remain decidedly undecided. So I'm guessing that might explain the slew of new campaign ads. And here to dissect them is John Carroll. He's a communications professor at Boston University and writes several blogs, including The Campaign Outsider. Good to have you back, John.
Good to be here.
So we'll talk about ads in just a second, but you've also been a longtime Boston a political analyst and watcher. Let's just get your quick reaction about Mayor Menino.
You know, it's interesting, this whole idea of, you know, he sort of turned Boston into a bigger league city, but a small town at the same time. He had that small town feel. He pulled over. He got the ball field mode. You know, in your survey, 57% of the people that were surveyed said they had met him personally?
Right.
So, you know, he did have that effect, but he also politically sort of turned the city into Mayberry. It was a city where there was no viable competition for him. Election after election, he was winning 2-1 over everybody. And he controlled the money, he controlled the fundraising, he controlled the developers. So there were things that didn't happen here because of Tom Menino's longevity, because of Tom Menino's sort of controlling presence. And I think he was a historic figure, but, you know, he also brought some aspects to Boston. It'll be nice to see Boston be a sort of roiling political town again with competition.
Well, speaking of his political power, in the last Senate election we had, he eventually did endorse Elizabeth Warren. So that was a much sought-after endorsement. We'll see. I can't recall that he's endorsed anyone just yet.
I don't think he's going to jump into the Democratic primary. He's too smart for that.
The political savvy always kicks in with him. So let's talk about the means by which the candidates have remaining to them in terms of reaching out to voters, and that is primarily through media. And there's a lot of commercial activity on television, especially on the Democratic side these days. So let's listen to a new ad from Democratic Senate candidate Stephen Lynch.
I grew up in the projects, just like Stevie.
I've been an aisle worker for 15 years. Stephen Lynch was for 18.
Stephen went to college at night, just like me.
And law school, like me.
I am Stephen Lynch.
I am Stephen Lynch.
I am Stephen Lynch, and I approve this message because I know how hard you work. And in the Senate, I'll never forget it.
All right, John, so lots of people are Stephen Lynch.
You know, Spartacus ran a very similar ad back in 73 BC, just like this one. I think what we're seeing is a split between Stephen Lynch and Ed Markey. Stephen Lynch is running on his bio right now. He's running on personality. We'll see in a minute. Ed Markey is running on his resume. He's running on policy. And it's an interesting split because it basically emphasizes and maximizes the strengths of each of the candidates. Stephen Lynch is out of step to some degree with the Democratic Party. That comes out in debates, but it's not going to come out so much in his ads. He's going to go and try to convince people that he has something special, something unique to offer as a senator, which is a very different perspective on Boston, on Massachusetts, on working families in general.
So the WBUR poll this week, I should say, found Lynch 11 points behind Ed Markey. But again, more than 40% of Democrats in Massachusetts saying they're undecided. I'm just wondering, you know, these two pools of potential Democratic voters that the candidates are going after, how much do they overlap? Are they really fighting for the same folks?
I think they are to a large degree, because there's only going to be a small percentage of people who turn out for a primary, a special election primary. The numbers are going to be reasonably low. The one interesting thing from the poll was Lynch's favorability numbers are far better than Markey's favorability numbers in that poll. So he's trying to take advantage of this a sort of connection that people have with him.
Okay, well, let's listen to what Ed Markey is trying to do on television here. This is an ad that has to do with gun control.
Long before tragedy swept our nation, it was Markey who forced the Chinese to stop exporting assault weapons to our country. Now Ed Markey's joined President Obama, fighting for tougher gun laws to make our communities safe.
I'm Ed Markey. In the Senate, I'll keep standing up for the gun lobby. I want these guns off our streets. That's why I approve this message.
Okay, John, gun control is a popular and, easy issue here in Massachusetts.
It is, but what we couldn't see were the visuals for this ad. And the visuals are headlines from Newtown, Sandy Hook Elementary School shooting. That is a little bit risky. Politicians very often in speeches, in public events, will evoke tragedies like that. They very rarely put them into ads. I think Markey is taking a risk, but he's trying to capitalize on what was widespread outrage, which is dissipating a little bit. But essentially, again, he's running on policy issues much more than personality.
And the question that suddenly popped into my mind was, is that because there's perhaps less personality to run on, as we may have seen last night in the debate?
In the debate, right. It was hard to draw very much from the debate. It was a little bit like speed dating. But you saw the personalities of the two. Ed Markey, I think it says something about Ed Markey that he's been in Congress for 36 years and his recognition numbers are so low. I think that says he's somebody who is an insider, who works sort of behind the scenes, who doesn't have a high public profile, and I think that's going to be an obstacle for him to overcome in this race. I think he has an advantage here, a built-in advantage. He's got certainly a financial advantage, but I think that he needs to somehow make a connection with voters.
Well, let's talk a little bit about the Republican side of things and a slew of web videos here in this case. First of all, from Gabriel Gomez, who released this online, basically introducing himself once again to voters.
My name's Gabriel Gomez.
I've never been in politics before, and I'm running for the United States Senate. I've literally lived the American dream. My parents immigrated from Colombia a year before I was born. It was the American dream of freedom and opportunity. I had a calling from an early age to serve my family's adopted country, and I applied to the Naval Academy.
So a very inspirational video there.
Yeah, that's some marching music behind that that voiceover, isn't it? I think Gabriel Gomez is trying to go out and capture some of the outsider sort of momentum that that you can pick up, especially at a time when people are disillusioned with politicians. So whoever runs against whoever the Democratic candidate is going to try the insider-outsider thing. And because they're so Markey and Lynch are so well-established, Gomez is trying to maximize or take advantage of the outsider appeal. One of his problems, though, is in a primary like this, you know, you're going to have the more conservative, the more true believers in the Republican Party turning out. Gabriel Gomez has a little bit of a problem because he talked about how he supported Barack Obama in 2008, but actually voted for John McCain, which is completely Kerry-esque. And,
you know, maybe he's right for the seat.
So I think that there's going to be a little built-in suspicion from Republicans. If he could get to the independent pool, he'd probably have a better chance.
Well, let's listen to two more web videos from two other Republican candidates recently put online. Here's the first one from Dan Winslow.
I'm a Republican in Massachusetts. What does that mean? We're the guys who are always coming from behind. But the fact of the matter is we all have common values. We have common goals. We want good schools. We want safe neighborhoods. We want smooth roads. We want communities that are good to live in and a good place to raise our families.
True. Nothing to really quibble with there. But here's one from Michael Sullivan.
I'm going to work hard these next few weeks until the primary. Like the underdog I am, I've been tested and trusted as a prosecutor. And then I'm going to run hard all the way to June should I have that chance to gain your confidence and to earn your vote.
Okay, John, so here's my question. I mean, there might be things to talk about in terms of the content of these two videos, but as we were talking about before the show began, these are web videos. Right. They're not being broadcast across the state on television, and neither of these guys are Justin Bieber, so I imagine none of these things are going to go viral. So is it worth the time to put an ad online?
Well, they got more exposure in the last 45 seconds than they've gotten up to this point. I mean, what they're trying to do is establish a presence, and they're trying to establish an image. Gabriel Gomez, I think about 1,700 people looked at his web video. So, you know, is that a good number? Not really, but it's 1,700 people who know a little bit more about him. It's interesting the parallel between Dan Winslow and Gomez. Winslow running very much like Markey on policy, on issues. Gomez running on his biography. Mike Sullivan is sort of the third man in, and there's a across the board in these videos, there is a level of video wallpaper and audio wallpaper that is staggering. I mean, these are so eminently ignorable. That I think if they're going to go on the air and do TV ads, they better come up with something that's a lot better than what they've got on the web.
Yeah, so if they're eminently ignorable in your Facebook feed, the chance you're going to stick with them on TV even less.
Not going to happen.
Well, John Carroll is a communications professor at Boston University. He writes several blogs about politics and the media, including the Campaign Outsider. John, always great to have you. Thanks so much.
Always great to be here.
And listeners, these videos, by the way, if you want to see them, they are at our website, radioboston.org. Stick with us, though, because coming up, Downton Abbey opulence captured in the real-life 20th century art of Great Britain. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is Radio Boston.